take a girl and a guy, and they fall madly in love and form a family. Sprinkle in some counseling degrees and a doctorate, a dream of transforming relationships as we know it. And 20 years later, we give you power couple Dr. Ray and Jean Katkodian. And this is their podcast, Couples Synergy.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Couple Synergy with Dr. Ray and Jean. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray.
And I'm Jean. And this is our podcast about love, marriage, and relationships.
Please check us out online at couplesynergy.com or on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Couple Synergy. And please subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, or send us any suggestions on topics you'd like to hear more about. And now on to Couple Synergy, an in-depth look at love, marriage, and relationships, where we bring you our experience helping thousands of couples transform their relationships for over 25 years.
Everyone says you should work on your relationship, but nobody teaches us how. So we've created this podcast to teach people what they can do to create the relationship they've always dreamed of.
With the partner they fell in love with. On today's episode, we welcome Pastor Jiva and Sulajana Sam. They celebrated their 40th anniversary of their arranged marriage in August 2023. They are marriage mentors and the number one international best-selling authors of The Unbreakable Marriage. Thank you so much for joining us today on our podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having us on your podcast.
So, yeah, I've seen, you know, a couple of your live streams come on LinkedIn. And we thought we'd, you know, kind of have you guys on as guests to talk a little bit about marriage mentorship and, you know, a little bit about the work that you guys are doing. Very in alignment with a lot of the work that we're doing as well. But first, can you tell our audience a little bit about yourselves? How old are you guys? How long have you been together? I know you celebrate your 40th.
Okay. So both of us are Indian origin. Our parents were from India. My family moved to Canada in 1975, actually, and the rest of us followed in 76. So Canada has really been home. For most of my life, I was university age when I came. And so in December, I actually turned 66. And I won't tell you Sulajana's age, but she's just a few days away from catching up with me.
Yeah.
And so ours was an arranged marriage. Our parents basically worked through a matchmaker and connected the two families. And we said, I do, August 18th, 1983. And here we are 40 years later with three married children and one adorable little grandson.
Can you tell us the story of the day that you guys met?
Yeah. So our parents met first and, you know, they first make the decision. They talk about things, you know, like dowry and, you know, all the details. And then if they're happy with it, they gave us 15 minutes to talk to each other and, That's a lot for my father. In most of the arranged marriages, you know, some of them don't even, you know, get a chance to talk. So we talked and some of the, you know, things Jiva talked about was how cold it gets in Canada. And, you know, it didn't mean much to me because there, you know, when it rained, it was cold, everybody got a sweater on. So yeah, and the other thing he mentioned is, you know, in India, even the middle class families, they have, you know, like maid service.
Domestic help.
Domestic help, yeah. So he said, you have to do everything here, you know, but the good thing, you know, it's all electrical and, you know, there it's a wood stove.
And yeah, manual labor.
Yeah, so he gave me, you know, little overview of life in Canada.
It was more of a reality check than anything else. I didn't want her to think that he or she would leave India, come to Canada and live a cushy life where she didn't have to touch anything and everything would be fine. And so I wasn't trying to scare her away, but I also didn't want her to come with any kind of unrealistic expectations. So of course, you know, she was totally fine with that. And yeah.
What were your guys' first impressions of each other and how did you feel on that day?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I thought Jiva was very, you know, humorous. Yeah, he cracked some jokes, and I liked that. And, you know, I was a fairly new Christian when we met. And so I wasn't sure what kind of questions he was going to ask me, whether I knew how to play any instruments, which I didn't. Or knew the Bible.
Yeah, she thought I would give her a quiz on the Bible that she couldn't answer.
Yeah. So my first impression is, he was very handsome and, humorous. Those were the two things.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, she was pretty and very personable. You know, even though there's the awkwardness of meeting each other for the first time, she was, you know, still very much at home and answered the questions, you know, without really having to, you know, think about it too much. Very easy, you know, free flowing kind of person. And so I felt very much, very comfortable, you know, with her at the first meeting.
Yeah. Can you guys talk a little bit about the matchmaking process? And is that pretty common in your culture?
And did you have a choice?
Okay. Yeah. So the matchmaking process is still the predominant way in which people get married in India. And part of it is, you know, you trust your parents' judgment. Mm-hmm. Because who knows you better than your parents? And parents take into consideration all sorts of factors that, like, two young people with hormones at the highest possible level will not consider. And so part of the social background is very important. In our case, for both families, the faith background was absolutely important. And they do, you know, even this is like 40 years ago when we didn't have the internet, you couldn't just go and run a check on somebody. But they did their version of targeting people who knew, especially her father went and checked me out through some mutual friends and so on.
Teachers
and
neighbors, yeah.
And the way our process got started, because we were already in Canada, my father contacted this man that was known to have a good reputation as a matchmaker and said, hey, we're coming down this summer, and here's my son, this is what he does, height, weight, and all this kind of stuff. And what are some things that are important for us in a bride, you know, for our son? And so in the meantime, her father had given the same marriage broker a list of qualifications that they were expecting in their future son-in-law. And so the broker compared both lists side by side. You know, he felt that we would be a good match. And so that's the way most of them happen. Now, some of the matchmaking happens just among families. You know, so families know each other really well. Somebody might say, hey, I think your daughter would be a good match for my son. What do you think? So some of the marriages get arranged that way. But a lot of them are done by professional matchmakers. And these days, it's also done online quite a bit. So there's all these matrimonial sites. I actually had a kind of a funny conversation with one of my cousins. And I said, asked her, like, how are your children? We hadn't connected with each other for a while. So I said, how's your daughter doing? Because, you know, she was in her 30s and hadn't been married, which in India at one time would have been very, very odd. And so she said, well, I'm trying to make matches for her. She told me that I could. So I said, oh, that's awesome. Like, you're working with the matchmaker? No, she says, I go and scour all the matrimonial sites. And when I find somebody that I think would be a good match for her, I send her his profile. And then she vets them. And then she tells me A or nay. So it's still happening. You know, the principle is still the same. But the means by which it is done, of course, has changed with time.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a full-time job.
It can be.
Oh yeah, I think that he was doing it.
No,
as a
but even for parents. It
oh,
can
for
be.
Parents, yeah. The other thing that's involved is still involved is the dowry. You know, that they talk about too. Some of it can be in properties, or money, or cash.
Or jewelry. So, jewelry is a very important part of the dowry. Gold. Like, our families were not that fussy about it, but there are some families for whom the marriage could be arranged. It could be like a make or break thing on how much they're willing to offer us a dowry.
The other thing they look at also, the education. You know, they kind of try and match, you know, almost the same level of education in most cases, right? So,
and I think Jean was asking, did they have a choice, right?
Yeah, did you have a choice?
So, did you have final say?
Yeah. You know, with me, I felt like my dad had made a decision already, but he was, he still asked me, but he, in a way, like, you know, this is a good match. You should really, you know, seriously consider this kind of thing. And, you know, I trusted him. It's not like something I felt like I was forced. I trusted my dad because he, you know, they are more mature in their thinking. And, you know, they had a good marriage, and we have seen other arranged marriages work, you know, work out. So he had a choice.
Yeah. Same thing with me. You know, my dad knew that ultimately, like, I'm the one that's going to have to live with this woman. So to make sure that he never got blamed for it, it was like, okay, son, you know, are you sure? You know, this is the one. And so, and I actually didn't say yes right away. A lot of times when after the initial meeting, the expectation is that, like, you would immediately, you know, give your response. I just had to kind of sit on it, you know, sleep on it, you know, pray over it. And then once I felt a peace about it, then it was like, yeah, let's get the deal done.
And what is the typical age that, you know, families would start using a matchmaker and start that process of finding a mate?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is like 40 years ago. At that time, it was anywhere from, I would say, like 15, 16
Women were often quite a bit younger in age. And also depend on the family.
Like 25, 26.
Yeah, like if a family valued education highly, they would say, you know, like, daughter, you're going to go to school, you're going to get your bachelor's degree, and you can do a master's, and then, you know, we will look for a mate for you. But there was
25, 26 for women, for men.
No, I don't think it was quite that in those days.
Yeah.
Because usually it was early 20s for the women.
Yeah, early 20s.
And late 20s for the men. And so, but quite often, like, one of the things we're finding now is that children are actually waiting a lot longer to get married, even in India. And parents, you know, are not forcing marriage upon their children. They're just saying, okay, take your time. And whenever you're ready, you know, we'll make the match. And a lot of, you know, Indian couples today are basically finding, you know, their spouse, their future spouse, you know, in their workplace, in their, you know, university. And then they basically tell the parents, this is somebody that I like. And, you know, can you go ahead and arrange the marriage for me? So it's not the old way of arranging. The matchmakers don't have to get involved quite that much. But we also hear of a lot of couples, Indian couples that we meet here in Canada, who met online through some of these sites, just like, you know, anybody else does with eHarmony or something like that.
Right.
And how long between the time you guys met and got married?
It was 2.5 weeks.
Yeah,
it was very quick.
Fast. We had
engagement.
Wow.
Engagement is a big ceremony too. So, an engagement, and within a week we were married. After the engagement.
The Indian system is set up in such a way that everything can be done very fast. Not like here, you know, where you have to plan a wedding like 2 years in advance just to book a hall. And so it just, everybody kicks in, the whole community kind of kicks in, your family, extended family kicks in. And there are people, I don't think we call them wedding planners, but they were essentially people who would take charge. And today it's a lot more systematized. They actually have people who are wedding planners who take care of all the details and subject to the availability of the church for the wedding or a hall, they can get things done in a very short time even today.
Are you seeing more of the younger couples now getting married because of a love marriage versus an arranged marriage, or has the, you know, percentages stayed the same?
I would say the percentage of love marriages, you seem to know the lingo really well, love marriages has actually gone up quite a bit. So that's why a lot of couples basically choose each other. In our day, we'd say, they had a love marriage? Like, it's like, how dare they? You know, how they,
very unusual.
It was not that common.
Do you guys have kids? And if you do, are you going to have arranged marriage for them?
No, we've got three children, and they all found their own spouses.
We offered, but they very politely declined the offer. Said, we're quite capable of finding our own. Yeah. You can pay for the wedding if you want.
Yeah, we've got a daughter and two boys. Actually, the two boys kind of, you know, discussed with us before they really was serious about dating. They kind of asked us. We met their, you know, now their our daughter-in-laws. We met them, and then after our first or second meeting, then they kind of asked us.
Yeah, what do you think? You know, like that type of thing. And they were quite asking for our blessing at that point, but they really valued, you know, what we had to say.
Input.
Our daughter was very independent. So she basically said, here's the guy.
Yeah.
We had interviewed our intern years back, who had an arranged marriage. So he was Muslim Albanian, and, you know, his wife, now wife, well, she lived in Macedonia at the time. He lived in the States. And we actually went to, you know, see the marriage, to, you know, to be part of the marriage and to witness it, which was really wonderful, a great experience. But one of it kind of sparked a little bit of some research on our part, and we found that, and I'm sure you guys know this, but, you know, arranged marriages have the highest success rate of, you know, versus love marriages in the entire world.
Yeah.
Right. And I was wondering on how has that, your arranged marriage, has that influenced the work that you guys do?
Well, there are certain aspects of an arranged marriage that I think are very important for the success of any marriage. And so for example, one of the things in arranged marriage is, you know, you're going to make it work no matter what. Like you're going to find a way to make it work. So at the first sign of trouble, you know, you don't stop. You don't say things like, well, I guess you don't love me anymore. Well, because there was no love to start with anyway. You got married and then you started loving each other. And so you go in with that determination. And the first years of our marriage were on the rocky side, you know, just getting to know each other, because we had no period of courtship, really, to know each other. So we're finding things about one another. And on top of that, Sojourn was pregnant quite early on into our marriage. And so there was a period of adjustment.
New country.
Yeah. And so that is definitely a part of what makes the arranged marriages, you know, work, the determination to find a way. And if we were living in India, for example, we would have a phenomenal family support structure where when a couple do run into issues, there's somebody in the family that you can lean on, you know, who will guide you through with their wisdom and say, you know what, you know, we went through the same thing too. You hang in there, things will get better. Or why don't you do this? Why don't you stop doing that? That type of thing. I think what I'm finding, because I was a pastor for 35 years, that in North America, you know, couples are very reluctant to reach out for help. You know, they try and solve everything on their own, and quite often will reach out to like folks like you and us and other counselors and therapists when things have gotten to a place where it looks really, really bleak. Yeah. And so that's part of the it's like the village raising the child. The whole structure is available to you to make sure that, you know, that your marriage stays strong.
I still remember my father and the family members, you know, saying there's no such thing or no such word as a divorce in our dictionary. So that's how, you know, like Jiva was saying, you know, that's how you walk into marriage. No matter what, you are going to work it out. And then the other thing I felt like, you know, the parents look at everything. There's no emotions involved. They look at, you know, from a more mature perspective. And I think that's helpful too. So if, you know, if we can do that here, not with, it doesn't have to be parents, you know, maybe ask somebody you trust in the family, or a pastor, or, you know, somebody like that, about their opinion on even before dating. I think, you know, that will be helpful.
Yeah, or even in the course of dating before you make a decision. Because sometimes, like, somebody who's outside can spot some things that you know, everybody has blind spots, and you get blinder when you're in love. And so you can easily miss them or you overlook them.
Yeah, you know. Lots of couples tell us, you know, I saw the red flags, but, you know, I didn't think it will matter too much to us. You know, I just ignored it kind of thing. And then, yeah.
Or even worse, I was sure I could change him once we got married.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I think you hit on a pretty important point here that a lot of people aren't aware of. In North America, the community has dissolved. Right, there is no family community that act as mentors to be able to help a young couple get through that rocky period early on in a relationship. You know, you would go to your mentors, you would go to your elders in a tribe or in a culture or in a community, and you would ask for help and you would ask for, you know, guidance. And nowadays, couples see it as admittance that there's something wrong, that there's a problem. Mm,
yeah. And there has to be a problem before they'll seek out.
Exactly, right. And I think, the research, Gottman's research shows that couples wait a minimum of about 6 years on average before they even seek outside help.
Mm.
And so you can imagine just how much those habits, those bad habits have been really ingrained, you know, for 6 years. And a lot of couples, they're pretty much alone because they don't have that community.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. You know, and some, you know, have that community maybe through their faith, you know, maybe their church. But churches, you know, if you belong to a very large church and all you do with church is just go on a Sunday morning, mm-hmm. and don't make connections with others, then it's still the same. but the churches that are intentional about having, you know, whether they call them cell groups, life groups, et cetera, where they make connections for people with one another and couples with each other, like those are very, very strong support structures that will really help the rate of divorce go much, you know, lower than it is right now.
Yeah, I think another important point that you made was that divorce was not an option for the two of you. Mm-hmm. You know, that was part of the family culture. You know, it was a standard that everyone, you know, lived by. And young couples today, they go and they cohabitate together, you know, and they're cohabitating to see if it's going to work.
Without commitment.
Without the commitment, right? And there's always that option there that I can leave if it gets hard or if it gets to be a problem. Right. And so that commitment up front that the two of you made and that your culture makes, you know, is very powerful and very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing, too, like when we were growing up legally, it was extremely difficult to get a divorce.
It should be that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And sadly, since then, the laws of India have relaxed. And so now we're hearing about a lot more divorce. Like, I'm pretty sure when I was growing up, the number was somewhere between 2-4% rate of divorce. And I'm pretty sure it's in the teens now, which is very, very sad to see, you know. But it's a mindset, right? Where if you start thinking, well, I made a mistake or my parents made a mistake. So rather than go through the hard work of making this one right, let me see if I can find the next right one. And you know, like the attitude is, if this doesn't work out, there's a way out. And there's a brand new start, and I'm not saying that is not that's not the right thing to do in certain conditions. However, when that becomes the prevailing attitude, then marriage is not taken, you know, seriously as a lifelong commitment, that you can make it work. You know, as you folks know, you know, when there's a will, there's a way to make a marriage work. But it is hard work if you ever, especially if you get to that point, you know, where you're becoming too entrenched in the ways in which you're doing things, and then it becomes more difficult to break patterns. So one of the things we recently started doing is actually focus a little bit more on mentoring couples before they get married and say, hey, let's prepare you for the realities of marriage. So either you don't get to the repair stage, or if you do get to the repair stage, you'll know what to do. You go in with some tools ahead of time, rather than get to that point and saying, oh, there's nothing we can do. No, we have tools. You just don't know about them. And then, you know, then you got to pay somebody to teach you some. Well, what if you did that before you went in?
Did you guys have a thought about who you should be as a wife or as a husband and what you have to offer rather than, you know, kind of the thing today is what can I get?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I came here, I knew my responsibility is make sure, you know, the meals are cooked, the house is all taken care of, you know, cleaning, all those kind of things. That's what I didn't allow him to do any of those.
Yeah. Sometimes they say, Lord, bring back the good old days.
And that you learned that when you grew up, that's what it was to be a wife.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when children came along, it's the mom's responsibility, most of it, you know. Yeah.
And then she got influenced by these heathen Canadian women. And then... Well, it's funny because... Well, like one of the things that the slogan has always been to me is supportive. So the way she provides the support has changed, you know, over the seasons of our life. So in that early part of our marriage, when I was actually pastoring three congregations in rural Saskatchewan, out in Western Canada, just north of North Dakota. And so I was hardly home. And so most of the household responsibilities really fell on her shoulders. Well, today the tables are reversed because I'm actually retired and Slojana's continuing to work for a few more months at the end of the year. And so I end up doing like bulk of the cooking and cleaning during the week. On the weekend, you know, she still, you know, does her fair share and then some. Otherwise, I don't get to enjoy delicious food. So, yeah. So what, and that's one of the things like we've learned is that, I mean, on the one hand, in the Indian culture, the man was definitely looked as the head of the household, and that is
the
breadwinner. And you know, and we were just talking about this the other day. Right now, Slojana makes quite a bit more money than me because my pension check doesn't come close to matching her full time income. But it's not an issue at all, you know, because we just. You know, grew in our marriage together of saying what can we do. So, for example, she was talking about the cleaning and stuff. In the early days of our marriage, I never went near the sink to wash any dishes. And so that was totally her responsibility. But we also knew, she also knew that when she was overwhelmed and she said, hey, Jiva, can you do the dishes today or tomorrow, a couple of days, whatever? Like, there was absolutely no hesitation on my part. To do that. So we just found out from each other, you know, what area we needed help and support, and then just, you know, offered it.
What surprised each of you the most about marriage?
That's a good question. I never thought about that.
Yeah, for me, I think when I got here, he was so busy, you know, with the three churches, I didn't realize how busy he would be, hardly home. That was a little surprise to me. I thought being a pastor, you know, he'll be home more, but it was just the opposite. He was, that was.
Yeah, and part of the surprise for me also was how much I needed to adapt, you know, to really, when I found out what Slojana's preferences were and what she, you know, what she didn't like, what angered her, you know, what made her happy. And one of her early habits, which we now laugh about, is she would give the silent treatment very quickly. and sometimes not just for hours, you know, it might be overnight as well. And so that was kind of like how can you do that? You know, like how can you live together in the same house, even sleep in the same bed, and you can't talk to each other? Like those kind of things. That you know, it's like just getting to know each other. That was part of that, you know, that process. And so,
yeah.
Wait, you think healthy couples fight?
What?
Do they? How did you guys get into the work that you do now?
Okay, there's a little bit of a story behind it. In 2009, I think it was, there was a popular movie called Fireproof. Mm-hmm. And Fireproof had the 40-day love dare.
Yeah.
Yep. And so it was becoming very popular in some circles, especially some of the Christian circles. And so our local Canadian Christian television network, national network, decided that to get their audience involved in it, they would not just promote the book, you know, and the film, but they would actually enlist three couples who would actually go through the 40 days of the Love Dare and do a video blog every night at the end of the day that they would then share on a website. And so we were one of the couples chosen. I think we were married for 26 years at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. So every day we had to do something, you know, say cook a meal for your, you know, that your spouse likes. Or say something encouraging, you know, throughout the day, something like that. So and then you have to report that in the evening.
So that was a really good experience. As a matter of fact, like our marriage got strengthened as a result of going through that. Because as much as we thought we knew each other, there were some areas where there was a little bit more sharing that happened. But the funny thing that happened was viewers would send messages to us and saying, hey, you know, we're going through this in our marriage. Can you help? And it's like, no, that's not what we volunteered here for. And of course, we didn't have any skill sets, really. I mean, other than some counseling courses that I had taken in seminary and from practical experience and some continuing education stuff. But we didn't really want to go there. And so so we just, you know, basically said, hey, you know, we'll pray for you or direct them to some resource that would be available for them. And then something started to happen after we finished the 40 days and they got a big finale in studio. That episode was watched by like literally hundreds of thousands of people all across Canada. And so Sulodhana started noticing this first.
Yeah, so sometimes we would go somewhere and, you know, people will, you know, look at us and they'll say, are you one of the couples that was on 100 Huntley Street? And this kept happening quite often. And I told Jeeva, I think we are supposed to do something more than that. That was just the beginning of something. And even people in our church, you know, really enjoyed the 40 days Love Dare, and they wanted us to do it again. But Jeeva wasn't ready. He said, no, we don't want to even go there, you know. They'll suck the life out of you. That was his word.
Couples in distress are the worst ones to work with.
It's tough work. It is.
Yeah. You know, for me, I couldn't, remove that thought. You know, it went on for a few years, and then finally.
Yeah, but again, like being supportive, she never really.
I didn't force him.
Force me to do it.
You cannot force anybody to.
Or bring it up every once in a while. I get this little hint. And more often than not, it was by somebody bringing up the television show. And then I started mentoring some men primarily, you know, who were in business, who needed some spiritual input, you know, into their lives and to somebody to pray with them and, you know, ask God for some wisdom and so on. And so these guys, just a small group, but they were all like really flourishing as a result of what they were applying that I taught them. And then it seemed like they hit a wall. And I'm really puzzled because they're doing all the right things and they're not moving forward. So one day in my quiet time, you know, with God, I was just asking, what's going on here? Can you give me some revelation? And I just felt this voice say to me, ask every one of them about their marriage. And so when I asked them about their marriage, every one of them had some issue in their marriage. You know, the unity was not there. Like nobody was at the point of, you know, breaking up, but it was definitely the love and harmony was not there. And it's like, okay, if you are not in unity at home, then it is definitely going to impact, you know, what you're doing and affect your productivity. And this is a spiritual principle at work that, you know, where there's no unity, you know, God's blessings cannot flow that freely. And so at that point, it kind of got my attention. I still didn't make a move. Until about, I think it was like a 5 or 6 week stretch when a number of guys basically called with SOS calls, 911 calls, basically saying, listen, you have to do something with the help of those who are marriages and we cannot go to anybody. Some of them are very high profile in their communities. You know, we know that you will value the privacy and honor confidentiality. And so at that point, I'm like, okay, I guess, and now the guards got me backed into a corner. We have to do something, but what are we going to do? And so I hired some coaches, who had some specialty in helping people set up, online coaching and mentoring programs. And one of the first things that they said was, just make a little video about what you're offering and put it on social media. Back in the days when you put something on Facebook and people actually got to see it. And so out of that, within a few days, a young woman that I knew contacted us and said, listen, we've been married for only 4 years, but we're already feeling like living like roommates and feeling like we made the wrong choice in getting married. And if you can help, that'd be wonderful. And so sure enough, we had a process that we didn't really know how to put everything together. And so we were flying from Toronto to Los Angeles to attend a conference, and somewhere up in the air, about 38,000 feet, all of a sudden I started getting this download. Mm-hmm. And I just kept on writing everything down on my iPad. It didn't all make sense at the time, but then I closed the iPad, looked back at it a couple of days later, and I could see the outline of what we were supposed to do. So then we just practiced on the first couple. They didn't know we're practicing on them, but we tried the outline on them, and within 4 weeks, they had their breakthrough. So at that point, we realized we had something that was going to be workable. And then, with their testimonial and referrals from some pastor friends, we kept on working with more couples. And we also refined the process. Like what we started out with is a far cry from what we have today. And we went for some marriage mentorship ourselves, yeah. Some conferences and so on, gleaned from others. And I'm sure
worked on our marriage.
Our own marriage. Yeah. And so eventually we came to a point where I have an online mentor named Perry Marshall, actually from the Chicago area. And so Perry, I was at an event with Perry, and Perry said to me, first of all, you're charging way too little for what you're offering. And secondly, he says, you got your system refined to such a point that you should be able to offer a guarantee, money back guarantee. And I was kind of shaking in my boots when he said that, because I know nobody in the relationship space offers a money back guarantee. But he said, you have to attach conditions to it. And if they do this, this, and this, then, and they don't get the results, give them the money back. And so once we instituted that in place, we found that couples were very attentive to what we taught them and applied them, because there was a guarantee at stake. And then out of that experience, we were running out of referral sources. And so we were thinking, how do we expand our lead supply? And again, I worked with the coach, and the first thing the coach said was, write a book and share everything. Don't hold anything back, because if it's working so well with one-on-one, then make it available to anybody that wants to use it. So that's how the journey progressed. And then we published The Unbreakable Marriage in August of 2022.
That's fantastic. Yeah. It's quite a journey.
Yeah.
And definitely it sounds like a calling.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it is. Yeah.
So what's next? What's in store, on this journey of yours?
Yeah. See, we did, two wedding shows, two of them, right? Yeah. Wedding shows. And, we feel like we are going to do maybe not focus, do also the pre-marriage sessions for couples who are planning to get married. So that's something we are working on.
Yeah.
We have to put some more work into it.
And when we're meeting these couples at the wedding shows, like many of them, like honestly believe that they do not need any preparation. Mm. Yeah. Going into marriage, we know each other, we've been living together, all those kind of things.
Yeah.
And in an earlier era, a lot of the weddings took place in churches. And so most of the weddings, I would say. And so in that case, churches would insist on some form of marriage preparation. Well, because today most people are not getting married, with any kind of faith connotation, and they can basically hire an officiant to come and do it and make it legal. And the officiant really does not have an obligation to offer any marriage preparation. So there's a gap there.
Mm-hmm.
But the real issue is knocking some sense into the couple, saying, hey.
Yeah. Actually, we found the couples are so focused on, that one day.
Yeah.
They cannot think of anything else. most of them.
Yeah. What about the day after and the lifetime that follows after?
They're not thinking beyond that. So, we've got some names. We have got some more work to do on that.
We found the same. In fact, we have been officiants for several couples and their weddings. But one of our conditions in doing that and being officiant is that we work with them and doing some premarital work because we want them, set up for success right from the beginning.
That's really good.
So one of the things we're beginning to see happening is, especially at the wedding shows, is couples may not be ready to like jump into like even doing an assessment with us. Mm. What we did with the last show was we said, if you buy a copy of our book, which is like $25, then we will throw in a free assessment, which actually costs us more than $25. But we thought, you know what, let's do something to help couples. And one of the things that I was finding in the conversations is many other couples are not ready to do that right now. And so we switched our strategy a little bit and say, listen, think of this as a marriage manual that you keep handy. So when you run into some situations and you're not sure what to do, you can look it up. So this becomes a manual for you. And if you do run into any kind of issues, then contact us. So we made up a little postcard to put in the book, or even if they didn't have the book, just give them these postcards so that when they do run into trouble, they will at least not immediately go to some kind of a default mechanism of, you know, we made the wrong choice, found the wrong person, you know, we got to make it right with somebody else. All those thoughts, before they ever start thinking them, they'll say, oh, there was that Indian couple at that show that said we could contact them.
Do you find that there are certain couples that you wouldn't work with?
Yes. So one of our main conditions is that both husband and wife must be 100% committed to getting their marriage back on track. And when we sense reluctance on the part of one, we had not that long ago, we interviewed a couple, you know, with the intent of doing a mentorship, and he could not admit that he had done anything wrong. You know, he was basically pointing to one particular period of their marriage where she did something what she did was wrong. But for him, that was the make or break one. And if she hadn't done that, and if she would do this, this, and that, then we'll be fine. You know, I got no problems on my own. So
he wasn't going to change.
Change, exactly. So at that point, it's like, no, this is a losing proposition for them and for us. And so we wouldn't take them on if one person had any kind of that kind of resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely takes commitment on both parts in order to actually change. And we do a very similar talk with our couples and assessments in the beginning to assess their commitment to the program.
Yes. And the other thing we're noticing too, and I'm sure you're actually trained to recognize this more than us, is people come into marriage, you know, with all sorts of trauma, you know, going back to their childhood, and they're blaming each other when really the damage was done long before they even met each other. And so sometimes when you find somebody who's got some really deep, unhealed hurts, then we always tell them, you know what, you are better off to go and take care of this first before you begin the marriage mentorship with us, because if your woundedness is going to get in the way of your marriage being restored. And not everybody gets it, but that's the truth, you know, because we've done it the other way, taking people on without realizing they had those traumas, and then when those demons started surfacing, it became like very difficult to get things back together. And so I think if we are able to, we actually, in our intake questionnaire, one of the questions is, you know, can you tell us about any circumstances that are, I forget the exact wording we use, but in brackets we say addictions, trauma, you know, previous relationships, etc. So we address that because otherwise the process becomes much more difficult.
Yeah, that past trauma, it definitely influences the work and influences the relationship. And you know, we talk about woundedness as well. You know, we kind of use the iceberg analogy, is that a lot of couples you know, they kind of fight at a 15% above the water type of perspective, but there's 85% of history that they're bringing into their relationship. And most of that history is, you know, what their caregivers taught them and any trauma they experience growing up, you know, in regards to relationship.
Like one of our fundamental principles that we talk about in the book is, like, you have no marriage problems. You know, you're two individuals with your own problems coupled together in your in a marriage. And together you will give birth to marriage problems.
Oh, yeah.
And so rather
than exponential.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So rather than trying to teach you how to communicate better, let's dig deeper and see why are you reluctant to communicate? Yeah. And more often than not, it goes back to something in the childhood, you know, or growing up years, right? And so we got to get to the roots. If you want to get them to produce better fruit in their marriage.
So where can people learn more about the two of you and the work that you're doing?
Okay. So our website is the best place for people to go. We are the SAMS from Canada. So our website is thesams.ca. And when you get there, you know, we have some information about what we do, but we also have a calendar link that if somebody wants to book a free consultation with us, you know, they can do it right from there, answer a few of those intake questions, and then we meet with them, do a deep dive. Sometimes we will get them to do an assessment before they meet with us if we don't really know them or we sense something that needs to be done. And then in the initial consultation, you know, we're able to make some recommendations of what they need to do. And also, if they choose to act on those recommendations with us, what kind of commitment will we offer them? And what kind of commitment do we expect from them? So we make all the terms clear. So the SAMS.ca is the best place to get all the information.
Great. That's awesome.
So last question. What is it that your partner does that you know they love you?
I'll start. Yeah. There are lots of things. He makes me breakfast every morning. And I know he loves me.
Don't forget the flowers.
Yeah. Oh, the flowers too, yeah. He buys me flowers, and I can tell
So Sulojana is very patient with me, and she gives me space to do the things that I need to do. I'm a little bit more impulsive by nature, whereas she's more of a contemplative in terms of waiting for things to do. And so once we kind of figure that about each other, so I've done a lot of things impulsively, and many of them didn't turn out very well, but she still, you know, gives me the space to do them, and is very forgiving whenever I have messed up. So I know that she does a lot of overlooking when she could be looking over. So I like that.
Nice.
Wonderful. Well, we want to thank you both for being on our podcast today. This has been a wonderful discussion.
Well, you're welcome, and we want to thank you for having
for
us. And I've seen you on LinkedIn before, but you know, we never really had a chance to connect there. And then when I saw your names on the podcast matching site, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, if I can somehow connect with them here and get on their podcast, that'd be so wonderful. And it's been great just to have this conversation with you. Didn't feel like we're doing a podcast episode. Just felt like
it usually does it. Just, you know, we're just chatting.
Just
that's
chatting.
All.
Yeah. So I hope we can, you know, keep an ongoing relationship with each other and support one another.
You know, thank you for the work that you're doing. There actually are very limited resources out there for couples. A lot of people think that, you know, marriage counseling is the end all be all. You know, for help in their marriage, and it really isn't, you know. And we do a couple podcast episodes on that particular, you know, topic itself. I mean, we're not really disparaging the field that we work in, but you know,
but many are untrained,
but
and they
many
can call
people
themselves.
Are untrained and don't have the certification and experience, you know,
or a relationship
to be working with couples.
Yeah, and what's even rarer is for a couple like you or us to work with couples.
Absolutely.
Like that is even rarer. And so, so that's why when we meet another couple who's also doing something similar, you know, we call what we do by different names. So it's really warms our heart to see what you are doing, the retreats and, you know, one-on-ones. Like just amazing. We can definitely learn a lot from them.
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Yes. Let's definitely keep in touch, guys.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I want to thank all of you for joining us today on Couple Synergy. Our passion is in helping couples and people have happy relationships, happy and healthy relationships. And this podcast gives us a fun way of bringing our knowledge and expertise to you, our listeners. For all of you listening, please let us know how you enjoyed the show. If you have any questions, comments, or topic suggestions, please email us at contact@couplesynergy.com. For more information about Couple Synergy and our programs such as Relationship 101, the Home Study Course, the next Couples Relationship Enhancement Weekend, and our premier couples coaching program called Couple to Couple, look us up online at couplesynergy.com.
And if you know someone who could benefit from this episode, please download it and share it. And thank you for listening.
Until next time, synergize your life and synergize your love.
You have been listening to Couple Synergy with Dr. Ray and Jean Kedkodian. Couple Synergy was recorded, edited, and produced by Dr. Ray and Jean Kedkodian. Voiceover and music entitled Breathe and Let Go was recorded and composed by Gina Gonzalez.